Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Cristiano Ronaldo, Karim Benzema, N'Golo Kante, Ruben Neves, Roberto Firmino. What do they all have in common? They're just some of the big name footballers who have joined the Saudi Pro League this summer transfer window. And the latest one to be linked has really sparked a controversy about the money on offer and the draw of this league for players in European leagues, because it is Liverpool's club captain, Jordan Henderson. To discuss this more, I am joined by Gavin Cooney, sports journalist with the42.ie, and by James Lynch, co-director of the human rights research group Fair Square, who we've spoken to about sports washing in other areas in the past. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. Gavin, you first. Why is this Jordan Henderson link so remarkable?
Hi, Philip. Yeah, it's remarkable because Jordan Henderson is the club captain of Liverpool, one of the highest profile gigs as a player in English football. He's still a relatively regular player there. He's got 2 years left in his contract. He's a regular with England ahead of the European Championships next year, or Euros that he might well win. And he's also, prior to this, been an outspoken in his support of the LGBTQ community. So he's trading career opportunities and potentially his reputation among a lot of the supporters that he has in England, all for some filthy lucre out in Saudi Arabia.
Several hundred thousand euro per week of filthy lucre. Why, in the twilight of his career, is he worth so much to the Saudis?
Because, A, he's pretty famous. I mean, he's worth a lot of money in the paradigm of English football. But the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund is worth $700 billion. So the £400,000 reported, in and around that reported figure, what they're going to pay Jordan Henderson every week is money just that they'll find just down the back of the sofa. And this is part of their latest investment plan in sport. We've seen that the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund purchased Newcastle United in the Premier League. We've seen all the shenanigans that have gone on in the world of golf over the last couple of years. And now they want to turn their own domestic league into one of the top five leagues across the world. Do that, they're throwing money at big-name players. You mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo is the highest profile of them all. But now this Jordan Henderson move shows that they're able to tempt players who, that this is not necessarily just a retirement home, but this guy is a high-profile player with a couple of years left on the clock. And he'll be another famous player with which they can used to sell their league.
And it's not just following the early days of the LIV Golf template, going for the older players, as you're suggesting there. There are some significantly younger names that have been seduced.
Yeah, and I'm sure the Celtic fans listening will still be lamenting the fact that their 24-year-old forward Jota has gone to Saudi Arabia. Ruben Neves is only, I think he's 29. He's left Wolves and could have gone to Barcelona, but chose Saudi Arabia as well. Marcelo Brozovic, who's a brilliant midfielder from Croatia, also had an offer from Barcelona and picked the Saudi League as well. So it's not just, as we say, a retirement home. They've given big fees to the likes of Ronaldo and Karim Benzema. But no, they're getting players in the prime of their career to go over there as well.
Has anybody said anything, has Henderson said anything about contemplating going to a country where homosexuality is illegal on the one hand, but he's a outspoken supporter of the, as you say, the LGBTQ community?
Yeah, so he's already faced criticism from Liverpool's LGBTQ plus supporters group, Copouts. They said they were appalled and concerned at the prospect of Henderson moving to Saudi Arabia, where, of course, homosexuality is illegal. Like, Henderson spoke out in 2021 about homophobia in football, and he said that it was his belief that when you see something as clearly wrong and it makes another human feel excluded, you should stand shoulder by shoulder with them, saying that the idea that anyone would be excluded from football because of their sexuality blows his mind. So now he is seemingly tempted by the move to Saudi Arabia, which excludes homosexual people from all walks of life, not just from football. And the supporters group asked the pretty pertinent question: when someone's already made a fortune, should money really tempt them to go to the work? And maybe that they should be asking themselves those questions.
Indeed. Okay, James Lynch, co-director of the human rights research group Fair Square, is with us as well, I said. Are they taking what they did to golf and applying it to football, do you think, James?
Yeah, I think there is a large degree of that. I think this is part of that Saudi project to turn itself from somewhere that's, you know, been associated with, you know, conservative Islam and being quite isolated at human rights abuses, into a kind of, you know, a global, it wants to, you know, Saudi Arabia, the Crown Prince wants this to be a global center for business, for culture. It's very, very ambitious, and it's very complicated to make that change, especially when, as Gavin was, you know, setting out, you have these very, very difficult problems, like the fact that you ban homosexuality. So how do you do that? You need to bring the kind of glamour that sport brings. But I do think there's another aspect of this is also about Saudi population themselves. This is about introducing kind of fun and activities and things that people can do, because the Saudi people are being asked to really change the way they live at the moment. I mean, they've never previously had to significantly pay taxes. And the Crown Prince wants everybody to start, you know, they're now having to pay VAT for the first time. And they're seeing all this money going into big developments and big glitzy programs like Live Golf. So what do you, there's got to be something on offer. So some of this is about creating a sense that, look, there's something in this new model, this opening up to the world, that's for everyone.
Okay, so it's about bread and circuses at home, as well as being a bit more fun on the international stage as well. Are they ultimately, do you think, going to try and engineer a similar reverse takeover of football in the way that they did with golf, or are they just going to be content to populate their domestic football league with a few starry names?
I think it's worth, you know, remembering that only a few years ago, you know, there were serious talks between, you know, Gianni Infantino and the Saudis about a multi-billion-dollar investment in a kind of new global league. Now that didn't go anywhere. It was probably a bit early, but I do think absolutely. This is the for me, this is the start of a major move to make Saudi a key player in the world of football. Like in the way that, you know, Qatar has done alongside hosting the World Cup, it's also, you know, you've had Nasser Al Khelaifi take a really important role in the way that football in Europe is run. I think Saudi Arabia wants to do that and probably go further. And now, interestingly, they seem to be pulling out of their ambitions to host the 2030 World Cup. I think it seems like they realize they might not win. I think more likely you're going to see a kind of a move toward taking control of these institutions through various ways. And I guess it's really hard to predict how that will play out.
So they won't try and replicate the success of the Champions League. They would try and insert themselves into it. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, I think there's a number of different routes this could go. But I think my sense is that Saudi Arabia has looked at, you know, if you take the World Cup thing, right, you know, if you want to bid for a World Cup, it's, you've got to sort of compete against all these different countries through a competition broken by FIFA, you know, sitting in Switzerland. I think the Saudis would prefer football to work in a way that they have much more control about the way things are done from the outset, rather than having to go through other people's competitions. So exactly how that works, I don't know, but I think we can expect to see Saudi Arabia trying to move into where it controls the levers of sport, as we've seen with golf and as we've seen with tennis. And I think that's going to be the trend in football too.
Okay. Gavin, a large part of the success of the Champions League is that fans are well able to travel to most of the cities where matches are being played. People are just not going to be able to go to Riyadh or to Mecca, are they? So do you think that the Saudis will try and find a way into the Champions League for themselves rather than trying to create their own version?
It's so hard to know how it plays out. I mean, it's difficult to see it happening in the way that golf happened, just because football is a deeper and slightly more fractured sport than golf, or pretty much if you got control of the PGA Tour, you pretty much have control of everything. They have an element of control in the Champions League already, in the sense that they're obviously the majority owners of Newcastle United, who have qualified and will play in the forthcoming Champions League season. And then, you know, Qatar, as James has mentioned, has used the PSG president, Nasser Al Khelaifi, to get into very influential positions in UEFA. and the European club is the club's representative body in UEFA. So they could use that kind of diplomacy to exert further influence. We've seen Yasser Al-Rumayyan, the chairman of the Saudi Public Investment Fund, become a hugely influential figure in golf through this merger, proposed merger of the PGA Tour. So that's it's probably using the going through the corridors of diplomacy at these governing bodies is a way in which they can do that. And the other thing is, we obviously the Super League idea failed miserably a couple of years ago. But one of the ideas of that was that it wouldn't necessarily be kept to Europe. It wasn't the European Super League; it was the Super League. So if there's anything like that in the future, then obviously that would throw open the possibility that Saudi Arabian clubs could compete at that kind of rarefied level. But anything like that, it seems a pretty remote possibility at the moment.
James Lynch from Fair Square, thank you very much. Gavin, before I let you go, we're in a World Cup final today.
Yeah, the Rugby Under-20s World Cup final in South Africa, 6 o'clock this evening, Ireland against France. It's only the second time Ireland have been in a final at this level. They lost to England back in 2016. This is going to be a tough game. France are probably just about favourites for it, but this is an Irish team to be very proud of, regardless of the results. The squad has gone through, appalling tragedy away from the pitch with the coach, that Greg Oliver, father of one of the players, he passed away in a paragliding accident at the tournament, and then many of the Irish players would have known the two St Michael's College former students from that college who died so tragically in Greece. So the fact that they've got this far is a remarkable achievement. If they can get over the line, it'll be something really historic.
Best of luck to them indeed. Thank you very much, Gavin Cooney. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.